I bring peace from siblings all over the state of Wisconsin. The members of the Wisconsin Council of Churches are about 2,000 congregations all around the state. And since I couldn't fit about a million people in here this morning, just hi from everybody. And also from my home congregation, who's worshiping over on the west side this morning. So we have these words from Isaiah, which might lead us to ask, how do the wolf and the lamb coexist? After all these years, how is it with the children? What about those ways of joy and delight and long life that are promised? I have some stories today. And I invite you to consider them an offering. I'm here today thanks to God and my ancestors and my teachers and my neighbors, and have to acknowledge those who shared and sacrificed and struggled and whose stories are now intertwined with mine. The land and those who inhabit it with me, all of those friends from my childhood who I don't get to spend enough time with now. My growing neighbors with short and long lives, and the soils and the stones and the waters that have seen eons. Some years ago, I read a book titled Ceremony by Leslie Marmon Silco, a Laguna Puebla woman. And she writes, I will tell you something about stories. They aren't just entertainment. Don't be fooled. They're all we have, you see, all we have to fight off illness and death. You don't have anything if you don't have the stories. Even though I naturally move and work fast and talk faster, thanks to my East Coast upbringing, I've begun to learn to do things a little bit more slowly, thanks to my contemplative and my First Nations teachers. And I have to give honor to Jim Bear Jacobs and Bill Quackenbush and Ada Deer, who have been generous in teaching me. First Nations can remind us that the land and the people are one. You're born on the land, you're laid to rest in it, body and blood inseparable. To know the people, you need to know the land. You wound one, you wound the other. Severing one from the other is this unimaginable trespass, creating bodily injuries, soul wounds. The Wisconsin Council of Churches land acknowledgement is titled, This is Some of the Story of the Land We're On. As if we could ever tell the whole story, right? There's always more to learn through relationship and understanding, not just documents. These aren't easy or simple stories to tell, but realities we need to grapple with. Learn about our own past, our ancestors, our collective history, what the government has done in our name, what communities of faith have done in the name of faith. That's a truth to teach. But here's another. We were not made for weeping or war or calamity, but we're really good at inflicting it on one another. Amen. And assuming that that's got to be the state of things. And so in a world like that, of course, we've got something against our siblings and our siblings got something against us. And we expect that something's got to happen because of it. And we get this spirit of fear within us. But we can do better. We cannot bless our descendants, all of our relations, without taking apart what's come between us. There's this road of confession and reconciliation, this turning around we need to do, which requires that we take time to know the stories. They're all we have, she said, to fight off illness and death. We have to learn the truth and let it bring us together instead of separate us. So, to the stories, what do we know of the relationships between white settlers and First Nations land and culture? A little mini history lesson, please forgive me. 1452, Pope Nicholas V, the head of the Western Church, issues a decree granting the Portuguese king general and specific powers to search out and conquer all pagans, enslave them, and appropriate their land and goods. Fortified by divine love, he writes, gives them the right to lead these persons in perpetual servitude. 1493, Pope Alexander VI does him one better. Adds a new teaching to this. Any land not inhabited by Christians is available to be, quote, discovered, claimed, and exploited by Christian rulers. And so the explorers came and the traders, and they were very proud of what they were able to map and put on paper. Because once you've put it on paper, it doesn't change, right? And you can claim it and you can take it. It's mine now because it's here. I know everything about it. An interlude. Okay, new story. My 8th great grandmother had the French surname of the Abbey. Jacqueline of the Abbey was born in 1651. I see people doing math in their heads. And arrived in Quebec in 1668, marrying at the age of 17. How does a girl with nothing, a child who'd been left at the Abbey, an orphan, right, make it to this young colony, and why? Well, the bishop who is chief advisor to King Louis XIV realized that you cannot sustain a colony with soldiers and fur traders and priests. What do you need? You need women to have babies. Not enough women were coming voluntarily. So he cooked up this plan to sponsor hardy women fit for the work of colonists to cross the sea. They were to marry when they arrived. And if they stayed married for a year, not only did they have that dowry that the king gave them, but they received a land grant. Oh. Whose land? The king's? The couple's? The Huron-Wendat Nation? Is the land an it to be divided and sold and given away? Or one with whom we are in relationship? Did a little more research. God bless the Mormons. Ancestry.com. And the priests with their really elaborate handwriting in the church records. Jacqueline married a soldier. A soldier's role is defense of the colony, right? Or maybe offense to extend the territory. So this soldier went out on night raids. While Jacqueline was at home tending the land and watching over their 8 children. Night raids. What's happening during night raids? People are dying. Somebody's children are dying. What's the calculus of sleeping children and safety? Let me say this in a time of war, when people contend for land and survival and parents weep. All of our children deserve to live. Everyone's children. The prophet spoke, they shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant and eat the fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. Now, land grants existed all over this continent, right? They're part of the heritage of many of us in the middle of this continent. I share this story not to put guilt or shame on us, or what about, but because the truth matters. It's part of these intertwined stories of settler colonizers and First Nations. The truth is that power moves people, and communities and cultures suffer for it. Another story. 300 years after Pope Alexander VI issued his papal bull, this church doctrine became the U.S. basis for westward expansion, cited by Supreme Court Chief Justice John Marshall, which is now this religious legal yuck called the Doctrine of Discovery, which is still active in U.S. and international law, cited recently as 2005 by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. In 1830, the Doctrine of Discovery led to the Indian Removal Act, which led to the forced removal of the Ho-Chunk and others from their ancestral land. And as a result of a series of unjust treaties, you know that, it's in your land acknowledgement, the Ho-Chunk don't have one continuous land base in Wisconsin. They own land in 14 counties. But that's far from the original land base they were on. Millions of acres originally. Today, there are 200 fluent Ho-Chunk speakers. Within the borders of modern day Wisconsin are 11 federally recognized Indian nations. The 12th brother town became citizens of the US in 1839 in order to avoid another forced removal. For most of their history, they'd been repeatedly relocated. Their ancestors came from the East Coast to Massachusetts, New York, Wisconsin, and had already been moved in Wisconsin multiple times. And then they said, if we become U.S. citizens, will you not move us anymore? And the U.S. government said, sure, but they didn't tell them the whole story. U.S. understood they'd given up their right to self-government and recognition in their property partitioned. They are still trying to get federal recognition back. And the organization I work with is working with them. So this is a fraction of the stories we could tell, right? We could sit here all day and tell stories like this. Boarding schools, children, language, culture, health, land acknowledgements that don't compel us to do anything. There's a story from my tradition in which the teacher instructs, if you remember that your sibling has something against you, leave your gift at the altar and go make things right with your sibling before giving your gift. Go be reconciled before you do anything about God. That's better. So even better than hearing from me would be to hear from our kin. That's what restorative action means. Whose voices have been excluded and ignored? How can we make space for relationship? So if you're looking for acts of reconciliation, I can give that to you. I'm going to talk about that a little bit in our workshop. But all of those things are its, right? Ultimately, I mean, the big theme for today is let's not be about its. Let's be about relationship. If there's something broken, if we don't have that beautiful vision before us that we're trying to rebuild, then we need to not stay where we are. We need to go ourselves. We need to fight off illness and death by building those stories together. That's how a new creation comes.